This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Let's get into something here. And for me personally, it's a very close one to my heart. And I don't know how many of us have actually been affected by it. And it's going to be a very open conversation for the next hour or so that we're having with each other, because it's a pandemic that is not going away anytime soon. And the more we go into it, the more we start realizing how much we actually don't know. I'm talking about the Nyaupe epidemic in South Africa. Just how many young men and young women are we losing to this drug? And at this point in time, as citizens of this country, have we given up in trying to salvage the problem? You know, and I've always shared this, that a lot of my family members are from Mamelodi. And you don't even have to go far in seeing what drugs have done to young people, particularly in Tshwane. And I know that there are other places that have been affected by it as well, right? So it's something that is not going away. There's certain spaces that you go to and then you just watch young people lie on the floor in the middle of the day, completely high. I was sharing the story a little bit earlier on about how I lost my own cousin to Nyaupe, where we had to bury my cousin. I think it was about 2 years or 3 years ago or so. And you know what was so disheartening about that experience for me? What was disheartening was to hear from my family members almost have a sense of relief. A relief because they finally knew where the final resting place of their child was. So it ravages society, it ravages communities. I got to understand it closely because the community was talking about how these boys, even they like coming komafung, but they don't eat the food there because the stomach can't handle the contents, right? So it makes them feel uncomfortable. The stomach lining is so destroyed that they can't even eat proper food. So what they do a lot of times is that they rely on sugar and sugary items as well to just, you know, digest. I lost my cousin because of Nyaupe, you know, and the way that we found him was also even more disheartening because he was not at home at the time of his death. But that's just my story. How many of us can relate to a similar story where we have to contend with the realities of Nyaupe in this country? And I wonder, as a community, have we given up this fight? You know, have we given up on our young people that are addicted to this substance? The other day I was reading a thread about Nyaupe as well, and it's something that I did not actually know until I was reading it, and it's something that I also saw right now in terms of research, and our guest in a moment, which I will introduce, will shed some light into it, that even when it comes to the mixture of it, it's a mixture of even low-grade heroin. And as soon as I saw low-grade heroin, I went ding, 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 ding. No wonder it is so addictive. Of course it's going to be addictive. It's heroin. It's a low grade of heroin, marijuana, cleaning detergents, rat poison, chlorine. Right? But as soon as I saw the heroin part, like the lower grade, so you know, like the waste properties of the drug, you go, oh, that's why when these kids take it, they get hooked so immediately. But the question is that how, at this moment in time, have the citizens of this country given up on the youth that are on Nyaupe? And is there any more that we can do to help them? And just how prevalent is it within our townships? Because if anything, it's watching the black child get destroyed. We are physically watching the destruction of the black child. And when do we say enough is enough? And maybe you, like me, have got a similar story where you've also lost your family member to Nyaupe, or you've got family members that are addicted to Nyaupe. Let's talk a little bit this afternoon. Let's share a little bit about what do we possibly do at this moment in time, lest somebody else's child dies because of this thing. Allow me to welcome our guests to this conversation. We've got Natreshka Naidu, who is the Operations Director of ARCA, which is based in Johannesburg, Assisted Recovery Center of Africa. Natreshka, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Hi, good day. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
And we've also got Solomon Lekhodu, who's a Clinical and Awareness Assistant at Second Chance Recovery Center in Mamelodi. Solomon, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Thank you for hosting us today. And greetings to our listeners.
We've also got Fanela. Fanela's joining us from Soweto. Fanela is a recovering Nyaupe addict, and he joins us this afternoon just to share his experiences from it. And Fanela, thank you so much for being brave enough to come to the show and to share your story. Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
Maybe let's start off with you, Natrishka. Just given the stats and the facts that are existing around Nyaupe and the addiction thereof, what's going on in the country context of it all? How prevalent is this drugs amongst our youth, and how prevalent is this drug right now amongst our countrymen?
Faith, right now and for quite some years now, we've been seeing as you said earlier, a pandemic in terms of Nyaupe addiction. And the biggest challenge is, again, is because it's so highly addictive that if someone uses it even once or twice, they can become addicted. And the withdrawals become so severe from the drugs that the person actually needs to use it. It starts becoming a want and it starts becoming a need. They need it to actually feel normal and to be able to function. Mm. And that is how the cycle of addiction begins and continues.
Yeah. You know, Solomon, you deal extensively with this recovery. Just share with us some of what you've seen in your recovery center when it comes to Nyaupe addicts. You know, our sharing around the concoction of it. And I will be very blunt and say it was the first time I actually went into what this thing is actually made of. And when I saw the heroin aspect, and we all know, or many of us know, that heroin is one of those one-time addiction kind of drugs. Once you hit you're hooked. You know, it's a hit and hook kind of drug. Yeah. But to have a mixture of a low grade of heroin could perhaps even explain why we've got so many young people that just can't shake it off.
Yeah, look, we are dealing, as you said, with a mixture of it. And, you know, having to deal with them, what part of our program is to also go to what we call hotspots, where they stay, where they start mixing and start injecting themselves with the drug. So what we have seen is, I mean, it starts off from the ages of your 12 years age. That's where they start experimenting.
Sure.
And, you know, coming up recently, we have discovered there's a primary school, which we will not say, around Mamelodi, where, you know, your children, as far as your grade 5, grade 6, where they're starting to abuse Nyaupe as well. So, and other drugs, are mixing it with other drugs as well. So part of what we have seen is young people are now giving themselves over to this thing because of other factors related to family situation. And, you know, though that is the excuse that is being given in terms of having to go into substance abuse, especially Nyaupe in this case.
Help us understand this, Solomon, just to interject there, but you said something so profound. There's no need to mention the school, but yes. What is happening in the school? Is the school allowing for the facilitation of these drugs? And when you're saying as young as grade 5, I mean, a grade 5 is 11 years old. And we're looking at 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds that are on this thing. So are we saying that the school actually creates that environment for kids to be addicted to it?
No, the school is not doing that. I think they come to school already on the drug. Some of the issues that we face, I mean, in this particular school when they called us, you realize there's either an uncle at home, a brother at home, or a sister who's abusing it. So these young learners, they are seeing what is happening. They are observing from their sisters or cousins. Then they start also experimenting. And when they go to school, already they are going there high, especially after break. That's when these guys who are selling are targeting them, and they start giving them over the fence. And though we are having your CPF, it's cool to guard, but it's never enough because they still have them on them. So it's one of those things where we are still fighting the issue of security, but the school is not, you know, permitting it. Hence, they are calling us to come and assist in terms of the abuse of this thing at that early age.
So basically, it's a pandemic at that school?
Yes.
There are more kids on drugs than more kids not on drugs?
Yeah, I would say you're around 30% of the young people in that school, girls included, who are addicted to this particular substance.
Yeah, and we'll get deeper into it. And I'd love your take in terms of, at this stage in time, has civil society given up on kids that are on Nyaupe? And how do we reverse what I and what many people have deemed as an epidemic? And you know what's so funny about this epidemic, fam, is that it's silent now. It's no longer a lot of noise that keeps getting made about it. Now it's happening and we've just accepted it as part of the norm. And once we've accepted it as part of the norm, we don't solve for it. We've just taken it as it's life, which means black boys and black girls are being lost in the system. Fanela, I would like to bring you in here. Can you just share with us your experience? I mean, how did you get exposed to Nyaope? Where did it all start for you? Hi, Fanela.
Hello. Oh, can you hear me?
Yes, I've got you. How did it start for you? How did you get addicted to it? When did you start? What was the reason?
Okay. For me, you know, I sort of like used to be an observer. I used to watch a few homeboys of mine, you know, use Nyaope, you know, right there in front of me. And at that time, you know, I had everything going my way as far as life is concerned, because I used to be a former soccer player. You know, we played in amateur football, you know. So after that, I was training young fellows, you know, in my neighborhood, you know, football. So basically, I was a team owner, you know, of a soccer team, a local soccer team. So I used to observe these guys each time, you know, we finished training, you know, and especially around late evening, you know, because it would be cold by the time, and we would have just a little bonfire there in the side of the field. And these guys would come and start, you know, with their paraphernalia and start using this Nyaope, you know. So I used to, for some sick reason, I liked how they would be bickering, you know, they would fall asleep in the middle of the conversations and stuff like that, you know.
Just to ask, Fanela, how old were you?
At that time, I was 22.
You were 22 years old at that time?
Yes, I was 22 years old.
Okay, continue.
Yeah, so it was already spoken foul of, you know, everybody spoke like how this thing, because like from the beginning, people that used to use Nyaope were people that basically were not taking care of themselves in terms of physical health. They were dirty, you know, dirty clothes, you know, and yeah, it was mostly street guys, you know, hobos, you know, from Joburg, CBD, you know, that were familiar with Nyaope. And then by that time it had come to the neighborhood, to Soweto, but it wasn't as, you know, as viral as it later became, you know. So I never thought, I always thought to myself that I'm not going to use this because it's been used by certain people that are named filthy, dirty hobos, you know. But one day, and then I think I got tired of using other form of drugs, which was weed and alcohol, because there was always chaos that followed when I drank, you know, like the day after, you know. I always had these sick stories. And then this homeboy of mine, whom I loved dearly, you know, I was telling him about what I had done the night before of my drinking spree, you know, and then he said that's why he uses Nyaope, and I just gave
him. So he uses Nyaope what to as a better form of drug to alcohol,
as a better form of drug to alcohol, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then what happened? Do you remember the first day you took a hit?
I remember it as if it was like yesterday.
Can you share with us what happened on that day?
Okay, on that day, it's like basically in my mind, you know, in my mind, after I took my first hit, you know, of that bag of Nyaope, in my mind, basically, I felt like I had found what I had been looking for, you know, because each drug I used, you know, there was certain kind of effects from the high, you know, like the weed, you know, the dacha, you know, I would get paranoid, you know, I would think people would see me of what maybe a scumbag I was, you know. And with alcohol, I said it was always followed by chaos. I don't know why, but alcohol, you know, in a way, I was able to shift my mind from fear into somebody that appeared to be fearless, you know, appeared to be raw and stuff like that, you know. But by the next day, the fear would resurface again, you know. So I did not like the effects of the high and the drunkenness I got from alcohol and the weed, you know. But when I got Nyaope, it was like a mixture of both, because sometimes I could drink and smoke weed and I felt good, you know. But Nyaope gave me the feeling of both in just one pack, you know. And I really enjoyed that high at that day, you know.
What happened that day?
After that day, I kept going back, you know. I kept going back to the back of Nyaope. And by that time, I think I was still in school. Yeah, I was in school. Not high school, but in FET College.
Oh, so you were studying in college?
Yeah, I was studying in college, and I was getting allowance, you know, and also I could also, you know, tell lies about, you know, school stuff, you know, just so I could get money, you know, from my mom, you know. And so I kept chasing that high until one day I discovered that I had withdrawals without it. You know, I always heard the fellow speak of the withdrawals of what happens when you are not using, you know, but because of, you know, the access to a school allowance, you know, to get money to go to school, you know, I did not kind of like experience those withdrawals in a way, you know, like straight away. But when that day came and I did not have any money and I was at school, I was sick, you know, and lots of things happened to me physically, also mentally.
What kind of things happened to you when you were withdrawing?
Okay, first of all, I felt like I had a fever or a flu, you know. My nose was blocked, you know, and my throat, you know, I kept on coughing, you know, and I kept on sneezing, and I had a running nose, you know. And then my body was numb, like I was weak. I could not do anything, you know. I could not even concentrate, you know. I could not even pay attention or focus on just one thing, you know, because, like, I had these discomforts all over my body, you know. My knees and my joints were, like, locked, you know, and I could not move. I could not be fast and stuff like that. And I was sweating. My whole body was sweating. I would feel exhausted so much that I want to fall asleep, but then I'll end up falling asleep for maybe, say, 2 minutes or a minute or so. And then I wake up, you know, sweating, you know, wet from sweat. And then to feel like I fell asleep for a long time. And then when I wake up again, I realize I'm sick again. You know, I'm not getting better. I was getting headaches, you know. And then the last part, you know, it was the diarrhea, the running stomach, you know, and I also could not eat, you know, and I kept on having this diarrhea nonstop, you know. That's how sick I was.
So when you were going through these withdrawal symptoms, how long had you waited? So did you make a decision not to take the drug that day?
That day, in fact, I thought I was sick, you know. I didn't think of much of the withdrawal. But when I got home and spoke to my friend, you know, the one who actually helped introduce me to Nyaope, you know, I told him of what I was going through. I thought I needed to go to the clinic, you know, because I've been drinking painkillers and nothing seemed to change. You know, and then he explained to me that that's the down. You know, that's the down, which is the withdrawal, you know. And I told him, but how do I fix this? Because I want to get better. I said, there's no other way to fix it but to get another pack of it, of Nyaope, you know. And that day I discovered that, you know, if I don't have Nyaope, I have downs and I can't stand downs. So in order not to have downs, I need to always make a plan to have Nyaope on that day.
How long before you realized that you were actually addicted to it, that you were withdrawing when you did not have it? Was it a week after you were taking it? Was it a month after you were taking it?
I think it's basically maybe, let's say, something like close to, yeah, a month, 3 weeks. Because
3 weeks.
All the time I had it, you know, I had money to go get it, you know. But after that, you know, that's when I realized, you know what, yeah, I have these withdrawals without it.
Can I ask, where do you get it from, Fanel?
Okay, when I was using, we got it from not just one place, you know, from in my neighborhood, you know, in my side of township, you know. I think by that time we had something like 4 dealers, you know, and 2 dealers were just living, you know, a block away from each other, you know. This block, it was this dealer's house where we get it, and the next block it was another dealer's house where we get it. And then if we could not get it around my area, you know, we had to go to a next door neighborhood, you know, and go get it from this other dealer who happened to be dealing to a lot of people, you know, around Soweto at that time. So we had to go get it there, you know. And if we could not get it there as well, in his neighborhood, there were also other alternatives. No, we go to this other dealer and this other dealer.
How do you know
eventually
that somebody's a dealer? Is it like just a thing that, is it word of mouth?
Word of mouth and introduction. I was introduced to my first dealer, you know, by a fellow addict as well, you know. And then after that, you know, somehow because of how much Nyaup is urging me to get it, you know, somehow I eventually get the courage to even go approach a guy who I've never bought drugs from, you know. I've also heard from word of mouth that he's stealing. And, you know, maybe by then, you know, they can see that I'm a Nyaup user, because you can tell a Nyaup user a mile away, you know.
Okay, we're gonna get into more of it. And thank you so much once again, Fanela, for sharing your story. If you just join us for this conversation, fam, we're talking about Nyaupe, the epidemic, the South African epidemic, and the impact that it's having on our young men and our young women, our young black men and our young black women. Have we as a society given up? Have we lost kind of faith and hope in exactly how to get back these young men and women? And how do we then have a call to action to end this epidemic? Because it's killing, but it's killing very silently. I'd love your take on it on 0861-987-000. Right now, though, it's 1:30.
Urgent, topical, timely. Power 98.7. Getting you talking about what matters.
It is 24 minutes to go before the top of the hour. We're having a look at the epidemic called Nyaupe. And exactly what makes somebody get addicted to it? Why is it that we are failing to intervene effectively when it comes to this particular drug? What role can we as a community member play in being able to intervene against this? Because it's killing our young people and it's killing them silently. I was sharing a little bit earlier on about how I discovered that Nyaupe actually has got heroin in it. A low grade of actual heroin. So it's got heroin, it's got marijuana, it's got cleaning detergents, rat poison, chlorine. But the part that was very concerning was the heroin bit, because heroin is a one-shot wonder. Once you hit, you are addicted to it. And have we as society lost faith in being able to intervene against these young black women and men that are lost to this drug on a daily basis? We're still with Fanela, who is from Soweto, who is a recovering Nyaupe addict. We've got clinical and awareness assistant at Second Chance Recovery Center in Mamelodi, Solomon Lihodi, as well as Natrishka Naidu, who's the operations director at ARCA, which is the Assisted Recovery Center of Africa. And Fanela, thank you so much for, as I said to you, for sharing your story. I've got one more question for you before we let you go. You were saying anybody can spot a Nyaupe addict or somebody that is on Nyaupe. As somebody that has recovered, you are able to tell the signs. Can you just give us a little bit of insight in terms of what do we look out for, especially people that have just taken it, maybe let's say for the first 2 weeks or the first 3 weeks, as to your point, before they go down that barrel of being addicts, where they're just now, as you were saying, dirty and street kids and all that. How do you tell?
Okay, you mean like the signs?
Yeah, what am I looking out for? What must families actually look out for? Let's say the person has now decided to experiment with it.
Okay.
What am I looking out for?
Okay, we first have to start looking out for, you know, the constant need for money, first and foremost, you know, because an Nyaupe addict, you know, will be keep asking for money, you know. Keep asking for money. They need money for this, they need money for that, and there's always a constant need for money, you know. And also how they sleep, you know. If they come home late, you know, someone like coming home late, you know, and maybe sleep in a couch, you know, or not eat, you know, not finish their plate of food, you know, like on a daily basis, you know, they would fall asleep right in the living room, you know, holding their plate of food, you know, and then when they wake up the next day, they might wake up in the afternoon, you know, say maybe they go to bed at 12 midnight and wake up maybe the next day at about 3 afternoon, you know, because they are tired, you know, they are exhausted, you know. Nyaupe has a way of straining somebody that physically, you know. And also, they need to also watch out for their attitude, you know, because when they don't have Nyaupe, you know, some might just, you know, disguise their addiction, you know, but the attitude will tell you, because they are aggressive, you know. Some might not be aggressive in a violent manner, but they're aggressive in a point of, you know, like even the parent will like question, like, what am I doing wrong? Why is my child so ungrateful, you know? Because I'm trying to help him out. You know, I've realized that, you know, most of Nyaope addicts, also speaking from experience, and Nyaope addicts, you know, I've had calls to come and talk to and, you know, try to see if they are willing to admit that, you know, this addiction is a problem, you know, in their lives, in the lives of their loved ones, you know. So I've realized that mostly boys, you know, mostly young males, you know, they resent their mothers, you know, because the mother is the one who is trying to fix the addict child, you know. Yeah. The mother is the one who's constantly, you know, trying something to get the child fixed, you know. And the child just wants to use Nyaope, you know, does not want to be disturbed from his high because he has found his escape, which is Nyaope, you know. But so when they try to intervene, you know, the child ends up, you know, hating the mother for that, you know. So the attitude, you know, they have the attitude, like, especially in the morning when they wake up, you know, just don't want to do chores around the house, you know, and selfishness, you know, it would take somebody something in the house and just deny it, you know. And when they're being confronted, they also like snap, you know, they snap and they they act out, you know. And yeah, basically those, I think, are the signs, you know, that people need to be aware of, you know. And the constant wanting to go to friends, you know, coming late, you know, also coming with different types of reasons, you know. Sometimes they give plausible but untrue reasons for their behavior, you know.
I got you. Fanela, I'm going to let you go. We're also going to be hearing from other recovered Nyaope addicts or recovering Nyaope addicts. Natrishka, to bring you in here as well, having dealt extensively with young people on Nyaope, sometimes this thing hides from the parents for a long time until the point of no return, right? Yeah. Maybe give us a little bit of even some of those signs that may not be present to the naked eye, but because you have worked with them, you can see it from a mile away. To us, it may be just a change. Mm-hmm. To other people, to yourselves who've worked with this thing, it's one of those red flags. What are those red flags that we need to look out for as people?
Well, just Mr. Fanela actually raised some very good points. So I'd just like to touch on one or two of those first. One of the biggest entry points in terms of addiction and usage is marijuana and alcohol. So what we find with many of our patients when we do speak to them is that they all have started, most of them, with experimenting with alcohol and marijuana. So that would be, I'd say, a first warning signal for a parent to see, my child has been using marijuana. This can actually go much further than that. The other second issue that is always a bit of an issue here is that the age of use is getting younger and younger. You know, most parents would not even think that the 8-year-old child would be using drugs. And I think this is a big red flag for us as a nation, as a community, that we need to start having these discussions with children younger and younger. Mm-hmm. Because previously we have these training programs in schools and we'd have these discussions with the children from about 12, 13 years old. Mm. And now we're actually having this wake-up call that these discussions need to start from a much younger age. In terms of signs that you can see from a family perspective, Fanela did raise a big one, is constant need for money. So there's always something that they're wanting money for. You'll find that the child is wanting to go out a lot, and there's a lot of going in and coming out, because especially in the morning, they need that first hit. They need to either go and buy the drug or find a way to get the drug. Hmm. The second thing is often the physical symptoms. So as again, like Fanela said, you'll have the runny nose. You'll have this child constantly having stomach cramps, constant ailments. So that could be another red flag to a parent that the child does seem to constantly be suffering from some sort of ailments. Their appetite has gone down. They're disinterested, their school marks drop. That's a big indicator. Because once the person has started experimenting and using these drugs, you find that their concentration levels go down. So that is another big indicator that their performance in school might drop, as well as they're acting out. They're not actually willing to listen to the family and things like that.
Sure. Solomon, to bring you in here, exactly when you get to the point where you say, you know what, I can no longer hide from the fact that my child or my family member, my relative, is actually addicted to nyaope and I need to seek help. What interventions do you guys put in place to get that individual some help?
Okay, part of what we do, our program is a voluntarily kind of a program because with people who are on nyaope, we need them to volunteer before they can go for a program into a rehabilitation place. Now, what we do is it's your awareness. We go to schools. We have what we call family visits, and we have family workshops within our center where we try and let the community know, especially with parents, just to let them know the program, how everything needs to work on. So what we do as a center is we will go to some of the nearby houses, just try to do awareness. We rent the level on a mofati and just having a talk with them. But part of what we do mostly is that we let people know it's a voluntarily kind of a program. We can't force people to come into a program. So we assist them into getting into a program. That's one. Number two, when they are here, they will be given a social worker that will deal one-on-one with the client at the time or our services at that particular time who wants to go to rehabilitation center. So we do go. We go to schools. We talk to teachers to identify a few of these learners who are already abusing drugs or starting to experiment. And we have your sessions with them. And we start talking, we start engaging them. And we also give them flyers that have our information, our WhatsApp as well. Because some of our clients, you feel maybe because they don't want to come out, they don't want people to know they are abusing nyaope. So we have a WhatsApp line where they can just easily contact us on. And so that we can have an open talk with them so we can have a win situation within that particular family.
Sure. Natushka, does an individual, and I want to open up the lines in a moment so that we can just get your insight as well, fam, mm-hmm. as we were hearing from our guests, just give their perspective on nyaope. But can they get to a point where, and you were making mention of this earlier, that the drug no longer works? That they are so, I don't even want to say the word drenched, but they're so, mm-hmm. they've been consuming it so much that it no longer gives them the high, that it just is now about survival and it no longer works, it no longer has an effect on them.
So there's almost two parts to this. With all substance abuse, something called tolerance happens over time. So what that means is that as the use continues, the person requires more and more substance to achieve that same high. So that's also where you see people starting to escalate, going from marijuana to maybe cocaine, then to heroin. In terms of heroin, it might be from smoking initially to even going up to injecting. So people do chase that high. But a lot of the time, it does get to that point where a lot of our patients that have come in wanting the treatment have said, I am so tired of this now. You know, I have to take this at this point. It's not that I want to. If I could give it up today, I would. Mm. But the withdrawals are so severe that it's not even an enjoyment anymore. It's pure survival at this point.
In just a moment, we're also going to be hearing from other addicts, or recovered addicts, that is, who've gone through this process, who've gone through the journey of being addicted to nyaope, as we're trying to find and salvage a way in which we can save our black youth in this regard. And how is it that you get to save the black young person in this regard? Natushka, you know, also when you're speaking about with withdrawing and what the person actually does to withdraw, can nyaope kill someone if they don't if they go through withdrawals and they don't have the waning off period, almost to say, and they don't have that, you know, the cutoff or the cutting of the weaning off the drug. Can I go into withdrawal and die?
So it may not necessarily cause death. Obviously, depending on multiple factors, including how long a person has been using for. So when you are using any type of drug, obviously it starts to depress your central nervous system. It starts to have an impact on your body's organs, your heart, your kidneys, things like that. So from the withdrawal itself, it is, it's not likely that the person will die, but the person will be in immense suffering, and it's not for a short period. It normally is 2 to 3 weeks naturally for the drug to leave the system. So that person would be in severe, severe pain in that time. If the organs have been damaged over long-term extensive use, then there is a possibility of death from other complications.
Let's go straight to the phone lines. Xolani in Mamelodi. Hi, Xolani.
Yes, good afternoon, Faith, and your guest right there.
Hi, sir. Go ahead.
Yes, man. I need your guest there to assist me here. I've got a brother who went to rehab twice. And in my community where I grew up, I know a lot of young boys, even older, who went there, I think, 3 times or even more than that. But I need you to assist me here. During the time they went for a rehab, do they also deal with their behavior? Because I think it has to do with their lifestyle. Because immediately when they come back from rehab, they go back to their normal lives, the same friends and so on. And then they end up relapsing again. Something like that. That's what I have identified. I think maybe they are dealing with the fruits, not with the root problem as to why are they really smoking? Why are they really in drugs? Because all of them, if you ask them, they will tell you that they want to quit smoking nyaope. And they do voluntarily so go to rehab. But immediately when they come back, you give them a month or so and then they relapse again. So do they really deal with the root cause?
The psychological issues, the deep ones.
Yes, those things.
Natrishka, maybe you can answer that one.
So I can only speak from a private treatment perspective, but treatment can only be effective if there are a few different components. And one of the big components that the caller raised is the counseling, because getting the person detox, medical detoxification is your first step. That helps to minimize the withdrawals and get everything out of the system. Then the counseling aspect, as he said, to actually help to change the perspective and the mindset. But another very important element here is family counseling. Because at the end of the day, you have to treat the disease as a whole. And if the family doesn't receive counseling and advice and guidance, then you're taking the person out of the environment and sending them back to the exact same environment. So that is where family counseling, group counseling, and aftercare is also vital in the treatment process.
We've also got on the line with us Thomas Momake, who is another recovered addict, addicted to nyaope, and is going to be sharing his story with us right now. Thomas, thank you so much for coming on Power Lunch, and good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Pearl. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. I hope I look like a pearl, but my name is Faith, but very close.
Sorry.
It's okay. It's all right, Thomas. Thomas, can you just share a little bit about your story as well? How did you get addicted to nyaope?
There was a friend of mine. A friend of mine that was financially stable. He was working good. He was working there by SARS main branch, Alberton. So I was staying with the guy at my place. By that time, my parents were working, go to mining, go northwest. So like Nexalali in Blue, Kidulali friend there. So the friend was earning chelete by, I understand. In such a way, I had a friend again, I was going to introduce this drug and stuff. But at first, he was hiding. He's using the drug. I end up samples of Raymond. I'm using 1, 2, 3, understand? So I end up in Nakibata who tasted that thing. Because, like, McNall from Mona, Hali High, Naba, like, in such a way, Horika Halla, Horuman, was Horkika Crea that high ela, Kitohona Roval, and then a Roval of Rope, and a Roval of Sharp, understand?
For long periods of time, I guess.
Yeah. Even in the morning, I have to wake him up. I go miracle.
Sure.
Understand? In such a way, I end up studying the drug. Understand? Kadi weekend they get over, but like because how the utuba, how analyze Down syndromes. Understand? This drug here, achel la kumiling wakap. Understand?
Yeah.
In such a way, it will end up each and every morning when you wake up, you have to get a fix.
Every single morning, hey, Thomas?
Yes. Every single morning when you wake up, you have to get a fix. That's all running in your mind. Yeah. When you start to open your eyes, you're thinking of getting a fix. Like it or not, you have to get a fix. You can't eat
You can't pass. You can't do anything. You have to go for a fix.
How do you take the fix, Thomas?
I was failed. In such a way, like, you can go and steal, or you can lie or manipulate if you don't have cash. Because, like, really, but you like Harrison, Kerakhnali, Banshwe, but Dilanka, who car recycling and stuff, Naliba Utuang, Nalba Buangmaka. So, like, you just want the shortcuts, Akore Okre fix.
Yeah. No, Thomas, how do you take the drug? Is it how do you actually take the drug?
I was using a syringe.
Oh, you were injecting yourself?
Yes, I was injecting myself. But at first, I was smoking it with So, ile ya elevator in such a way that like actually would look at us. So, you use a syringe injection.
So, what you turn it into liquid and then you inject yourself with it?
Yeah, you just pull maybe 10 milliliters. Then you inject it. You mix it with water.
Oh, you mix it with water.
Yeah.
Where did then you
come again?
And where did you used to get the drug from? Did you know these dealers?
Yes, at my location, because I'm from East Rand.
Okay.
At my location, there's a lot of dealers. You know, there's a lot of dealers. Maybe I'm talking about 6 dealers or 7 dealers around where I was staying. Even in my street, there's a dealer. Maybe a fed house from my house.
Mm.
There was a dealer.
Do you ever look, now that you've recovered, do you ever look at what it did to your parents or your mom or your family?
I was afraid, to be honest with you. I was living in hell when I was using drugs. You know, since well, because I've lost bachuba pa yabandratang kolsetting like, you know, this thing, like, it distanced the loved one from you. In such a way, I was a pious limb to my parents. You know, Nikili,
sure.
I was a disease to my parents. You know, because my mom is having something like heart attack now because of me.
Mm.
You know, my dad is not good when it comes to health because of me. This thing, it creates it creates something, my good parenting, understand that. It creates this thing. Your parents end up hating you, chasing you away because of the wrongdoings that you're doing. Because you're selfish in such a way, when you want to get your fix, you'll do anything to get that fix. You can even kill to get that fix.
How old were you when you started taking it?
I was 22 years old.
22?
Yes.
How long were you taking it for?
I think for 8 years. Because after 8 years, it was my first rehab.
After 8 years?
Yes, it was my first rehab. This is my second rehab. Then I relapsed after 1 year, 6 months.
Gotcha. You know, Thomas, I appreciate your authenticity and I appreciate your story and for coming on to the show and talking about your experience. We thank you for that.
Thank you for it.
Pumlani in Ridderbot, hi.
Madam, how's it?
Very well, thanks, and you, sir. Go ahead.
Great, thanks. Last month, Mule Zimbeke was on ENCA talking about drug trafficking. Where the drugs are coming from, where are they manufactured, who imports them, how they get into South Africa. So that information is there. It's on YouTube. The drugs, they come from Thailand. They're imported by Frelimo, the liberation movement of Mozambique. And then they come to South Africa via Mozambique. So the question now I have is, why are we not talking about putting a stop on it? Why are we not partitioning our government? Becky told us the information. We have the information. He has the intelligence. The information is out there. Where are the men? Why are we not putting a plan together to get the government to stop it?
Because
Wunga, Nyaupe, they're spin-off drugs from heroin.
Yeah, and you know, when you're speaking about that when crime persists in a place, right, or in a country, you have to go deep and say who's allowing the crime to happen and to whose benefit, right?
The government.
Because otherwise it would stop. If it's not benefiting anybody, if it's killing our young people, it would stop. But because we know that this kind of businesses and the underground business and the black market is it's a business that's worth millions and millions of dollars, it persists because there's a in normal economics, there's a demand and then there's a supply. Yeah. So clearly somebody is supplying the demand. And somebody is allowing and creating an environment for this demand to be met. But you're raising very interesting points as well on that one, Phumlani. And we're going to continue and we're going to go deeper into it around you as a family member, those that have experienced it as well. I'll still be taking in your experiences on 0861-987-000 as we unpack this issue of Nyaupen and the effect that it's having on our young men and young women. Young black men and young black women lost every day to this thing.
Power Lunch, weekdays 12 to 3 p.m. on Power 98.7.
Now we're talking. We're in the midst of it. We're going to unpack it for a few more minutes and even get a little bit of an understanding of where to from here, society. We're looking at the epidemic of Nyaupe, a mixture of low-grade heroin, marijuana, cleaning detergents, rat poison, chlorine. It is one of those drugs that have taken society by storm, a lot of the townships by storm, and the victims of this are young black women and young black men. And we've been hearing from our experts this afternoon, including from those that have recovered from it and those that are in recovery currently, that as young as 11 years old, that's where it is right now, where schools are even being impacted by 30% of learners in one particular school in Mamelodi is actually has got young people that are using Nyaupe. 10-year-olds and 11-year-olds. There's an epidemic and it's killing our kids silently. What do we do about it? Latrishka Naidu is the Operations Director at the Assisted Recovery Center of Africa, and Solomon Dehodi is a Clinical and Awareness Assistant at Second Chance Recovery Center in Mamelodi. Solomon, I'd like you to bring you into this one. In terms of just looking at the recovery process and the subsequent relapsing, why do we find that some of these young men and women that come into these programs, they end up relapsing? What's the cause of it?
Many factors I was facing. Because I heard one of our family calling, trying to get clarity. So part of what we assist with, so our center is halfway house. So we send people to rehabilitation centers. So after their 6 weeks period in your rehab facilities, if someone feels, if one of our patients feels, I'm not ready to face the world now, they can always apply and come to us. When they come to our center, they stay with us for a period of 3 months.
Mm.
So within the 3 months, there is a program. You have your NA program. With that program, that's where they meet with each other, those who used to be on substance, where it's recovering drug addicts only, where they start sharing their stories. They share also how, based on the book that they are having in their program. And also, if someone tells them, for 6 years I've been clean, you have to also know what has helped them in their journey of 6 years being clean.
Mm.
So there are many factors that cause our patients to finally relapse. One, some of them, they are not ready. They went to rehabilitation centers because the family was forcing them to go to a rehab, so they were not ready to stop abusing.
Sure.
So another thing is what one of the guests said, where the family is still traumatized. We are dealing with the one who's abusing, but we never really went into intense counseling with the family. So the family also needs therapy, because if one person is abusing substance in the family, the rest of the family also, we can take them as addicts as well, because now there's trauma. They are not free around this particular individual. So we need to also give them counseling. We must also, have sessions with maybe the mother, as they are the ones who will be probably, more affected in this kind of a situation. So what we do is we need a wholesome kind of therapy for the family, for the individual, or for the patient who says, I need help. So we need to also assist them. It's a pity, you'd help 10 and one would come out relapsing because they were never ready. So it makes as if the program is not working while the program is really working. We have success stories. I'm here with the two guys who really, you know, are trying so hard not to go back into using substance. And they're also giving back by telling others as well of how they want to, soar on wings into life and finally make it into what they are actually here for on planet Earth.
Now, Trishka, to bring you in this one, in terms of treatment, I know that you guys have also got a special kind of treatment in private care.
Yes. So ours is a bit of a different approach. We do what we call a medical detoxification. Now, that helps immensely because it shortens the withdrawal period into a much shorter period. And at the same time, it reduces the withdrawals so that the person is firstly less likely to run away because they're not going to be suffering throughout the process. And secondly, it allows them to actually get the substance out of their system much faster in a safe environment. Then we use non-addictive anti-craving medications. And this actually helps to block the person from craving for the drugs. So with this combined approach, as well as including the psychotherapy aspect of things, with the counseling, the group sessions, and things like that, we find that a multidisciplinary approach has the best chance of success.
It just is, it's so interesting how, you know, even the programs that one has to go through to actually be able to numb this. And you were saying, Natrishka, that in some instances, you literally have to taper off. Yeah, the term that I was looking for earlier on was to taper off. You can't just cut it and go cold turkey.
Mm. Well, this is when we speak about the withdrawals and the craving.
Yeah.
Now, for someone that has not experienced that, you know, it's very difficult to actually understand what is this craving. But the best way that I could explain it to you is, you know, just say we lock you up in a room and we say, no, you can't have anything to eat, but we put some food outside the room and, you know, in front of you in the window. And on the first day, you're going to say, no, you know, I don't really need your food. I'm all right. But by your second, third, fourth day, the hunger becomes so intense that you would get to the point of breaking a door, breaking a window, doing anything you can to get to that food. And that is what a craving is like. It's a level of desperation. And this is when we hear things like patients run away from centers. You know, they run back to the drugs. And as again, it comes down to those withdrawals and cravings. So if you manage to minimize that as quickly and safely as possible, your chance of success goes up.
Sure. It really is one of those situations where we really have to rethink and reset our mindsets as community members on how exactly are we going to win this war. It's an epidemic. It's here and it's killing and it's alive and it's killing young people on a daily basis. But are we speaking a lot about it and as well as the effects that it's having on our community members? I'm going to welcome in just a short moment another individual who is a recovering addict and recovering Nyaope addict, Sibusiso, just to speak about his side of the story, to speak about his experiences in that regard. So Sibusiso, let me bring you in here. Sibusiso is also in recovery at the moment. Sibusiso, are you there?
I'm there, Mrs. Faith.
All right.
How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Sindhu, sir. I'm very well, thank you. Sibusiso, talk to us a little bit about your experience. How did you get addicted to Nyaope?
It started when I was using Mandrax.
Okay.
So I didn't get Mandrax that day. So I was looking for Mandrax. So eventually, where I usually get my Mandrax, they were not there. So one of my friends introduced me to Nyaope. And that's when I got hooked. I smoked. I felt good. Then it went on and on.
How old were you, Sibusiso?
I was 25.
25?
Yes.
Okay. And then how do you remember that first high?
Yeah, it was good, man. It was good.
Yeah.
I did remember, yes.
Just around the price, how much is Nyaope or how do they sell it?
It comes in a form of a small plastic. It's a powder which is wrapped in a small plastic.
Is it like white powder? What color powder is it?
It can be white. Sometimes it can be like cream white.
Okay.
It depends. Yeah.
Okay.
So it comes in a form of a plastic. It's wrapped in a brown plastic. The suppliers that usually supply, they sell it 20 rand. And then the guys who sell it to us, they sell it 25 rand or 30 rand.
So 20 rand for the bag?
Yes, from the main supplier.
From the main supplier.
Yes, to our dealers. The dealers, and then it's 25 rand or 30 rand. It depends where you get it.
And how easily accessible is it? Is it available everywhere?
In my location, it's everywhere. Like, I have, like, from the hostels, in my street, usually in the hostels. So it's easier to get it.
From the hostels? Which hostels?
From my location, which is Soweto.
Yeah?
Yes, I'm from Soweto.
Okay. So from the hostels, you can get it from there?
Each and every hostel in Soweto, you can get it.
And how many hits a day do you take?
I was satisfied with 4 bags a day.
4 bags?
4 bags a day, which is 100 rand. And on top of that 100 rand, I need to buy materials, which is ganja, a Rizla, and cigarette. So I probably spend 120.
So you were spending 120 rand a day on drugs, basically, on nyaube?
Yes, and that won't be enough. If that's the amount I have, if I have more money, I'll just go on and on until I have a blackout.
So when did you know that you needed help? What made you want to go get help?
I started doing things that I wasn't proud of. I started stealing for my community. I started stealing for my family, And eventually, by me stealing again, I was beaten by the community. So I started sleeping in the street, So that thing made me to realize with name, and now I'm putting my life in a mess now. So I need to come out and do something about my life. I tried so many times going to rehabs, it didn't work out, because I wasn't doing it for me. I was doing it for my family, pleasing my family. But this time, eventually, when I was at my rock bottom, sleeping in the street, hearing those cold nights, the winters and whatever. So I decided to myself, now enough is enough. I need to check myself in a rehab. So that's when I realized now I can't handle it now. I've had enough. So I need to put myself into a rehab.
How is your family doing, Spusis?
Oh, eventually, my mother passed away before witnessing me taking drugs. My father, he was 2 years late now. He wasn't taking it good, it was killing him, seeing me doing those things that I was doing, and other family members, also, because I was stealing for them also. So they were not happy with the way I was living then. Ish. I was I was harming them in so many ways. So they were not taking it good, man. They were disappointed in me.
Can I just ask you, did you ever have dreams? What did you want to be? We're all born with dreams. We're all born with certain things that we want to be in life. Did you ever have dreams of what you wanted to be? Did you ever have ambitions of what you wanted to achieve?
Yeah, I grew up wanting to be a businessman, in any way of business, seeing myself in business. Even today, I still have those dreams of becoming a businessman, an entrepreneur.
Okay. Yeah. And I must say, thank you. Before I let you go, you're okay. Listening, you're sharing your story, and we appreciate it. If there's a family that is listening out now, and that family has got a member of the family who's on nyaube, as somebody who's experienced it, as somebody who knows it, what advice can you give that family on their child or on their family member that is on nyaube?
So to your family out there who's having a problem with someone who's taking drugs, I would like to tell them to don't give up on the person, on the individual. Just show some support, because of it's something that you have no control of, But if you have support, support, family support, I think they will fight for it, They will fight as a family, and then help the brother or a sister out there, to go to rehab, and then just help the brother, out there, because of this thing, is killing us. So I wouldn't like to see other people going down. I will encourage the family to help the person who's struggling with the drugs, to come and witness the steady glory of recovery.
Thank you so much, Busiso, for sharing your story. We really appreciate it, and all the best with your recovery process, okay?
Thank you, Mrs. Faith. It's an honor to have me.
Thabo in Mamelodi. Hi, Thabo.
Yeah. Hi, Faith. How are you?
Good, and you, sir. Go ahead.
I'm good. You know, these things are engineered, Faith, and then by people that know who works in labs, who knows that when someone starts to take this thing, it's not easy that you will leave it. That's why it's the $1 billion and Faith, in my family, it depends. You remember Hope's Day? The news anchor, yes, she's a member of my family. And then Mark, you know, Tessan, he's a member of the family. And then these people first get his family. And if it's end of the day, our sister has passed on, killed by his son. Nobody wants faith. Nobody. He goes to jail, he's a member of the family. Can't celebrate it. I think faith something to be done because of we are losing family members, we are losing boys. The future, the generation of this country is going away.
That's true, you know, and we keep speaking about it from a very high level, and that's why sometimes it's very important to bring the storytellers, the people that hold the stories, to talk a little bit about their own experiences in it, because it's one thing to have this high-level conversation around drugs and nyaupe and the taking. But when you understand what it does to families, when you understand what it does to people, and maybe even when you understand where and how they've started taking it, it gives us more of an understanding of exactly what we're dealing with. Here's something even more interesting, Natrishka, as we wrap this conversation. It speaks significantly to friends. Because all of the young people that we've had on have said, I was introduced to it by my friend. It almost makes one wake up and go, check your children's friends.
100%. We've also had similar reports from a lot of our patients that they were introduced to it by a friend. Some patients have even reported that the first few times that they spoke nyaupe, they were not aware it was nyaupe. So the friend said, look, it's marijuana. They smoked it with them, and after a few times, they didn't understand why they were having the withdrawals. So again, analyze who your children are with. You know, are they a good influence and things like that? And at the same time, accessibility is an enormous problem in our communities, because as a lot of the speakers have mentioned, that on every corner there is a drug dealer. So that we have to ask ourselves, what is being done about that? Why are the drugs so accessible?
Yeah, I hear you. I'm going to go to Tsakani. Maria, hi. You say you have a child that's selling nyaupe and manufacturing it in the community.
No.
It's a child that you know.
No, my child is Mwanaka Watsuba.
Oh, Mwanaka Watsuba.
Watsuba, and I'm going to buy four kisses born, and I'm going to buy money for it. And then Tunku Sambu Toko, Utsuva Jana Udula Mutumo, and a third pony at a metriki Koskolo. Honoson Kipatrikiro Wano Tubam Tekwan, Otto Kalakam Tekwano, Hakurakum Tekwano, Uyagai, Akirukoya Koyanaya Upe.
Sure. So
now, Mishimano Rixanya Upe, or the same street in Namo, and the Babats won never come about Luana. Bahwani Wakintwa and Hanataba Urizabana Barnakadi Katana Abadiza Abasenya Ope Ariano Sabeletabana Bahai. And a Kim Shimano Munyan and M Shiman. And we walk a confident into a mona hori why play la horia nzobaniga lento.
And the Numtana Covelu ya Pemanai.
Uya pe magakul, nzenya mnyanya the way sorry kona na lengin yam saba.
Sure. I'm going to open my line. Solomon, Sis Maria called us. Her child is smoking. Can we just, help us intervene here?
Mama, where are you? Where are you from? Are you from around Mamelodi?
I'm here in Tsakani. No, I'm here in Tsakani, Brakpan, near Springs.
Okay. You know what I want to do? I think maybe offline I will have them give me your number so that we can locate you with maybe a referring place around your site so that we can best assist you. But normally under such conditions, one of the best things we would give is to tip off the police. I know these days it's quite unsafe considering all this that is happening, but my advice would be, you know, let the police get involved as well in terms of the dealer. But in regards to your children, if possible, have a talk with them and let them know what they are doing. And also, in terms of assistance, if they show that.
Yeah, we're losing you for a little bit there, Solomon. Just move around for us. Yeah.
Now, can you hear me now?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, I was saying just be firm in talking to them and letting them what this or what their behavior is doing to you as their mother. And as well, have them, you know, be open to say, are they willing to get assistance in terms of stopping their abuse of Nyaupe.
But Solomon, are you able to intervene? Because she's saying that she's afraid of her child.
Yes, we can intervene. Hence, I'm saying simply because of our jurisdiction, she's in Tsakani,
yeah.
And I'm in Mamelodi, I can try and locate her to a particular referral organization from their side.
Awesome.
But to intervene, I will intervene. I will assist Mama on this one.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Osmaria, we are going to see how we can get you some help, okay? Okay. All right, Maria. And this is where we have to leave it for now. I thank you so much to all my guests. Solomon Dikgodi, Clinical and Awareness Assistant at Second Chance Recovery Center. Natrishka Naidu, Operations Director at the Assisted Recovery Center of Africa. And you, fam, for being able to just participate in this conversation with us. We understand we had way too many calls and we couldn't get through all your calls, but we really appreciate all of you that had something to say about this. And more than anything else, I think I thank all those that who were brave enough to come on board and share their stories, those who were addicts who decided to come aboard and share their stories as well. I think what's disheartening more than anything else is that it's killing the black boy and the black girl. I think more than anything else, if there's something that is like a pain, it kills the black boy and it kills the black girl. I know this because my own cousin died because of Nyaupe, and he died in the middle of the street. And then we had to find him in the middle of the street after how many times that he's gone back and forth and back and forth. And this is just the reality of so many families. But somewhere, somehow, we need to keep talking about this because we do not want another child lost to this epidemic. So let's keep talking about it.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.